Hello, I'm Matt Harmon, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. And Dalton Del Don, my co-host for today's show, do you know what satisfied me today? And actually, not really just today. We'll go with the last 2 days in general. Last Friday, my fiance and I met up with her group of friends we went to like one of those new drive-in movies, which is great now because like essentially we're just going backwards in time, really here during the pandemic. And one of her friends' fiancés has like a home gym set up, and I was so furious with it that in a fit of like jealous rage over the weekend, I've been scouring Facebook Marketplace for like old gym equipment. Essentially found a bench press this weekend. We are starting a gym in the Harmon garage, and you just love to see it. So I'm satisfied with that. So I'm gonna be in my home gym, gonna hook a TV up down there, the whole thing, and I'm gonna be doing my bench presses, Dalton, while I'm snacking on some delicious, salty but very high protein Planters nuts.
Like it, Matt. You know, I checked out your situation on Instagram. I've seen the pictures. It looking good. I'm not much of a free weights guy. I do some push-ups. Sadly, it's almost end of my swimming season. But yeah, I'm jealous of the situation there. Look good. So we'll see you swole. I'm going to see you. We should do a before and after picture.
Well, you know, I've gone through quite a lot of transformation weight-wise in my life, yeah. Of course. But, you know, this whole pandemic situation, I'm done with Doughboy pandemic bod. You know, it's time to get, because the gym is, you know, they're closed. They're not coming back at this point for quite some time here in California. I'm ready to just take this thing into the house and do it. So yeah, the big task though is, of course, now I got to actually clean out my garage, which I'm sure you can relate is a real pain in the ass. But anyway.
And I should say your definition of Doughboy is a little different. You look to be in pretty good shape as we're starting here. I would say that. But anyway, go ahead.
Some of us have to be very hard on ourselves. But luckily, Dalton, we're gonna start off positive on this show. Essentially, what we're gonna be doing on these Wednesday programs is kind of just diving into some, you know, heavier nerd stats, some deep analytics stuff, and sort of trying to identify some trends, sort of trying to identify what's signal, what's noise. We're going to start off positive with some week one trends that we just absolutely love to see. And I'm going to start off on this because I think, frankly, it's the biggest story in the NFL. I know that, you know, we could talk about a lot of different things, but to me, the fact that the Seahawks, Dalton, went pass heavy and were in fact one of the most pass heavy teams in week one, and nobody made them do it. You know, they controlled that game in Atlanta throughout the entire afternoon. And at the same time, they were 64% pass rate on first and second down, 32 passes, 18 runs on first and second down. That is exactly what we've always wanted to see from the Seahawks. They really actually let Russ cook. And I feel like personally, this has to change our entire outlook for this team going forward. Am I overreacting, or is this actually some good signal here?
First of all, speak for yourself as far as this being positive news. As a 49ers fan, it was Sunday. Not only the only team losing in that division, but Russ is cooking. That's a major issue. It's a problem for the entire NFL if this is an indication of the future, because I believe he threw on first down at a higher rate than the Chiefs even last year in the first half of this game. It was the highest first down percentage. So, yeah, he's one of, I said in my NFC preview, one of the five best players ever. And Jason and a couple commenters, took a step back on that. And man, if they let him throw like this, unfortunately, the rest of the world's going to believe my crazy comment. Whatever. Obviously, his resume didn't suggest that. But on a efficiency basis, Russell Wilson is awesome. And this is scary if the coaching staff has truly unleashed him. And yeah, he's a superstar and is going to put up big numbers. He's going to be the guy. And everyone said Dak Prescott might move into the top two. Well, it looks like it could be Russell Wilson as well.
Yeah, like if this is the approach that they're taking, I think it changes the entire game. I mean, because I'm with you, Dalton, like Russell Wilson's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen play. You know, like the fact that he's always consistently bailed them out. You know, I think Kevin Clark from The Ringer always says like the Seahawks have never played a normal game. Well, it's because the coaching staff always puts them into these positions. Like they still run their team over the last few years like they're that team that went to the Super Bowl, where they have this great defense and they can just rely on a running game. They don't have Marshawn Lynch anymore. They don't have all of these great defensive stars. But, you know, the reason that I think this is a signal and not just a noise. And, you know, I think that, look, I think this is a little bit narrative street type stuff. But the fact that Mike Florio, or what maybe it was Mike Tirico, going back and forth, essentially reported that Russell Wilson went to the coaching staff and said, enough is enough. Like, you have to, you've got to let me do this. And I think in an era where we're seeing players becoming, you know, more empowered than ever, if you're Russell Wilson and you say, like, hey, I'm not doing this stuff anymore where I'm just going to, you know, manage the game and then bail us out at the end of it, like, really let me take the reins, because look at all of these other great offenses around the league that are doing this. That's why I buy into this as being something that we're going to see as a permanent change, because Russ is apparently aware of the movement and is fully backing it to the coaches.
There was this crazy graph going around that was showing the discrepancy between teams trailing versus leading, and the Seahawks just stuck out like a sore thumb as far as always trailing in the first three quarters, and they're the only team that shoots way up in the fourth quarters. And it's obvious just by the usage of Russell Wilson. And if that does, if this is a signal, which I fear it is, yeah, he's going to put up a monster fantasy season, and the Seahawks are a threat to win the NFC, no question about it, no matter how whatever question marks they have on their defensive line. And yes, this was a good matchup in indoors against a susceptible defense. But if Russell Wilson truly does throw the ball more, it's a problem. So now, what do we do with Chris Carson? On one hand, Russell Wilson actually led Seattle in rushing yards this game. Mm-hmm. And Carlos Hyde, the late reports before the season were like, uh-oh, it might be a hot hand approach. But conversely, six targets is really nice. I mean, of course, not going to catch two touchdowns every time. But man, if he starts getting more usage in the passing game, that could really help counter the lack of volume as far as the rushing. So what do you make of that situation?
Yeah, I'd rather them be a more efficient offense for four quarters than have Chris Carson getting 20 carries. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, if Chris Carson gets 14 carries and six targets, something like that on a weekly basis, I think that the trade-off there is better, because we know that receptions are worth, or targets are worth more than carries in pretty much any format that awards you a reception bonus, whatever. So I like this just approach for the entire offense. I like it for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, obviously, but I even like it for Chris Carson. Like, I think that if Chris Carson was still that running back that was the face of, you know, the face of a run first, boring offense like the Seattle Seahawks have always been, I think he would have been a fine, you know, upper tier running back too. But this now, I think, puts him in position to potentially be a top 12 type running back, which I don't think was in the range of outcomes before.
It also, I will point out, probably makes him more likely to stay healthy, because there are more valuable touches, but fewer, you know, just the banging in between the tackles over and over. So what a narrow tree in Atlanta. Has there ever been a game with three receivers seeing 12 targets? I mean, that's pretty wild. Or certainly, I mean, that's pretty crazy. So very fun game for sure. And Russell Wilson, fantasy superstar and possible league MVP candidate for sure, if he keeps getting treated this way.
Yeah, we don't have to spend too much time on the Falcons, but that Falcons game, I mean, the Falcons just look like the same team every year, you know, awful defense, gets worse every year. Dan Quinn can't figure out how to fix it. And Matt Ryan puts up a bunch of hollow yards, you know, and I think Matt Ryan's a good quarterback, obviously, and they have good players on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, now it's essentially just like, this is great for Ridley. I mean, it's great for Ridley and it's great for Julio Jones. This was the analysis coming into the year. And now it's just like, I feel like we're going to have to play a weekly guessing game between Russell Gage and Hayden Hurst, because Gage obviously got the volume in week one. Hurst had a higher rate of slot routes than any other tight end in week one. So we'll just see. We'll be playing a ping pong game back and forth then. Let's move on to another trend that we love to see.
Just want to say, you're right. Has there ever been a quieter 450-yard game by Matt Ryan?
Yeah, you're totally right.
I mean, hollow yards. And just, if he threw the ball 54 times and Todd Gurley had one receiving yard on five targets after finishing last in yards per route run among running backs last year, I think that's an issue for your Gurley backers out there. Sorry, Matt, continue.
No, I pretty much agree with your analysis. Like, I don't really care what Gurley does in September. I really care about what he's doing into October and November. Rooting for him, obviously, but, you know, it is what it is. Let's move on to the next one that I really like to see. You know, I'm a Josh Allen guy. Josh Allen led the league in play-action pass attempts, and the Bills obviously therefore led the NFL in play-action play rate. It's a huge jump from last year when they were 24th in the NFL. I liked what I saw out of the Bills offense in week one. Let's obviously put the caveat out there that the Jets are a goddamn dumpster fire. Number one, we know that they're going to be one of the worst defenses and one of the worst teams in the NFL. But at the same time, and obviously, like, we know that Josh Allen's always going to have a disgusting overthrow, like we saw to John Brown in the end zone. We know he's going to have some of the, like, most memeable fumbles of all time. We know that that's going to happen. But I like that the approach that the Bills' offensive coaching staff put together, which is a nice boost along with the personnel that they now have in place.
Yes, it's a cheat code, play action. So this is a great point. And if they continue to use this, it's going to help his stats for sure. You said it. He has the highs and lows, the bad fumbles. The John Brown was so open for that other touchdown.
So open.
I would be so wide open. I would be shocked. But maybe what if he does keep the value of two wide receivers? Man, I mean, it's possible. John Brown, love to see John Brown suddenly become such a reliable option. I remember he was just so mad. I know you loved him throughout his career. I have too. It's awesome to see. Like I said, a cheat code, all this play action. I was one of the people saying it's hard to rush for 8 to 10 touchdowns every year as a quarterback. He's going to regress. He had another one. The Jets had a linebacking core was just decimated.
Yeah.
But he had not thrown for 270 yards in a game before in his career. And here Allen throws for 312. The rushing TDs are the cheat code to go along with the play action. So fantasy terms, he does not have to be the most accurate real life player to be a top 10 and approach top 5 fantasy guy this year. You look good so far after week one for sure.
Poor man's version of the 2015 Cam Newton season. That's the kind of the way I'm looking at it. I don't think he's gonna have that type of year. I think it's crazy to project anybody to have that type of year. And I don't think that I think Cam Newton's a much more talented passer than Josh Allen, but I think that's the type of season that he's gonna have. And no matter what, going into week two, they play the Miami Dolphins. So
right.
another right. Like, you know, fire up Diggs, fire up Brown, fire up Josh Allen, ready to go. I'm interested to pick your brain on this one because this is a spot where I was wrong on one of the running backs after week one. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Austin Eckler were both top 10. I think they were tied for ninth among running backs in routes run. Now, the narrative on both of their receiving work is quite different. The fantasy hive mind is essentially saying, look, the passing game work for CEH will come because of his resume in college, the coach that he plays for. Austin Eckler had a really solid day as a rusher, a plenty of volume there, but nothing in the passing game. You know, just not what we are expecting from Austin Eckler. And the fantasy hive mind is essentially saying this is what we should expect because of the coaching staff that he's playing for, the quarterback that he's playing with. Have you adjusted expectations on Edwards-Helaire or Austin Eckler as a receiver based on what we saw in week one, or did this sort of confirm your priors?
Okay, so first of all, it's just funny that Edwards-Helaire was the only rusher in the NFL to run for 100 yards until Monday night games and not have a catch. And Jonathan Taylor, meanwhile, lead all rookie receivers in receiving yards after week one, yet get removed at the goal line for Nyheim Hines. Like, what is happening? I mean, is this literally opposite of what was drawn up? But, of course, that's what we should be expected. But, yes, my expectations have changed as far as this. As feared, the Phillip Rivers to Tyrod Taylor change was big time. I mean, Taylor, it is interesting the route runs that you point out about Eckler, but Taylor, 3% of his passes were targeted to running backs, 37% of Rivers were. I think Hines, if you're in a PPR league and he's somehow out there, I would use all of my budget on him. I mean, especially if he's going to get 10 to 12 carries too. I think offensive line will play better. Quentin Nelson entered that game a little banged up. Jonathan Taylor, could that have gone any better? I mean, you go from so frustrated from number three running back out there to Mac tearing his Achilles. Wow, what a difference there. But Eckler, you love to see all the carries. There are two concerns with him. Not only the Tyrod Taylor situation, but Joshua Kelly, he looks like the real deal to me. So, yes, I'd be concerned if I were an owner of Eckler. And I don't know. What do you make of it moving forward? I mean, there's so many running back situations. I mean, I'm the guy who was in on Connor. So, I mean, you can't be too upset if someone comes away week one with 19 rushing attempts.
Yeah, I think that, like, we could see these scripts totally reverse after, you know, week two. Yeah. We might see Austin Eckler get 6 targets or something and feel a lot better. I do think that Josh Kelly's not going away. Like, that is clear. I thought that going into the season, though. I thought that Kelly would be a factor. He might be a goal line back, which is what we saw in week one, essentially. Anthony Lynn, I think this is important. And Anthony Lynn came out after the game and said, I don't think we would have won against the Bengals if we didn't have Josh Kelly. That says to me that he's going to continue to get work, especially with Justin Jackson already nursing another injury. So this is one I really want to track, because I think I agree. Edwards-Helaire is going to end up getting passing work. Austin Eckler, I want to see. You know, I'm leaving the candle lit that he might still get some work going forward. You mentioned the Steelers. I want to touch on this guy next, because he's one of the guys that we both liked coming into the year. Dalton, I don't know if you were aware of this, but folks legit wanted to, you know, retire and cancel Deontay Johnson at halftime because he dropped like a pass and made a couple mistakes. But here's what I think is more important. Deontay Johnson among week one Steelers pass catchers, 32.3% of the team targets, that was first on the team. 55% of snaps, that was 55 snaps, that was tied first with Juju Smith-Schuster, and 32 routes run second to only Smith-Schuster. I think that is the better signal than the fact that he made a couple of mistakes. I think it's still, you know, wheels up for a guy like Deontay Johnson, who looked good in spurts, obviously, when he wasn't dropping the ball.
In that one ball that hit his back shoulder, it was unclear, even though the announcers made it seem like it was his fault because he was having a quote-unquote rough night. I don't know if the reaction of Big Ben that necessarily was on him. But yeah, 10 targets, you love to see it. The whole offense got off to a sluggish start. It's a weird season and all that. I think Dante Johnson's in for a nice year. As long as Ben Roethlisberger says he's healthy and he looks fine, you know, he didn't look too much like, the beginning there was a little questionable, but it was a nice matchup. But Deontay Johnson, yeah, I drafted him aggressively. So very, very nice to see him bounce back after that tough start. But James Washington, some nice upside, and Juju looking good too. But yeah, that whole offense, I expect bigger gains from Eric Ebron moving forward too. What do you make of the whole Connor and Snell situation? At least I did back him up there, but man, it didn't take but two quarters for him to exit that game. It's frustrating.
Yeah, really frustrating, because I think he was obviously set up for a great spot. And the fact that the passing offense looks great, even Chase Claypool is out there making plays, and that's a guy that Roethlisberger has hyped up too, that would just lead you to believe more in the backfield. You know, I just said the phrase, but Mike Tomlin also said just today that he is hoping he's leaving a candle lit for James Conner, which that means who the hell knows. I don't think that Conner is like done for good. I think if you take Benny Snell off the waiver wire, like somebody asked me this question. They sent me a screenshot of who's available in their league. It was Malcolm Brown, Nyheim Hines, Benny Snell, sort of the big mainstays. I put Snell third on that list. I don't know if you would feel the same way, but I feel like Snell could give you a couple good games, and then Connor might come back and then make things pretty confusing.
I do agree with that, because I like those other two. I mean, Malcolm Brown was going to go down as the most underrated player in all of drafts if he's just the lead back on the Rams. But the thing is, this Steelers team could have one of the best rosters in football, and Tomlin really wants a featured back. So if one of them emerges, there's going to be value here. But yeah, it doesn't sound like Connor's injury is that serious. And as Snell did look improved throughout camp, it's still Connor. Yes. Connor is around. So it's going to be frustrating for the time being. If guys who have both of them on their teams would frankly just want one to go away, so if that's Connor, that'd be fine. But I agree with you overall the season. I would rank him third there because Connor remains. While we're talking here, I'm sorry to circle back, Matt, but you're the wide receiver guy. I just want to ask you about the Chargers situation. Mike Williams, this looked like one of the guys that jumped out to me of week one. The guy was supposedly playing injured. So you do the route charting and all that. Who would you rather have on your fantasy team? Because I know you like Keenan Allen, but I overreacting? Because I'm like, dude, week one, new quarterback. This guy's younger. He's bigger. He's the monster downfield. I would rather Mike Williams on my fantasy team right now. So tell me why I'm just crazy overreaction week one Dalton, and tell me why I'm wrong. And Keenan Allen is clearly the safer guy to have for the next 15 weeks.
I mean, I don't know, man. The thing is, like, I just don't see Keenan Allen's still going to be the same guy, right? Which is, he's going to run great routes. He's going to be open in the middle of the field. But he's just, this is where I might have just gotten caught up in the fact that he's such a good player, and I figured that they'd adjust to that. But maybe he's just not going to get the type of usage. Like, he's not going to get the type of volume to pump that type of receiver up. And that's where I might have erred too much on the fact of his skill set. Because here's the deal with Mike Williams. Williams is a good player. Like, I thought this last year when charting Mike Williams, like, man, if some team just threw him the ball 150 times, you know, a season, like, what would happen? Because Philip Rivers constantly throwing this guy into contested situations. I feel like, you know, the NFL has that catch probability stats via Next Gen Stats. I feel like every Mike Williams target has a 15% catch probability. This guy is always targeted downfield. He's always targeted in tight coverage. And it's not because he can't separate. Like, he's a pretty decent deep route runner. He's a pretty decent, like, curl route runner, whatever. I mean, he's not the best separator in the league, obviously, but he's not hopeless. So, but he catches a lot of those passes, right? Like, he ends up bringing a lot of those down. So that's why I like Keenan Allen. I ended up drafting a lot of Mike Williams because I figured he would get these vertical targets. I figured he'd get these targets in high leverage situations. And look, here's the deal with Williams too. If something ever happens to Keenan Allen or Hunter Henry or whatever, it's also worth noting Hunter Henry had the second highest target share among all tight ends in week one, trailing only Darren Waller. And he's a guy who could really go nuts against the Chiefs this week. If you're playing daily fantasy, like, I definitely think about Hunter Henry. So, but the point here is, like, Mike Williams, you know, if something ever happens to any of these guys and his target share boosts up, he gets all of those high leverage targets. So, like, as I'm sitting here talking to myself, I'm like, you know, I really want to say Keenan Allen because I love the player and I think he's one of the most underrated receivers in the league. But there's a lot of situations where Mike Williams could end up not outscoring him, but closing that gap in fantasy by the end of the year.
You love to see this concentrated share, though. I didn't realize Hunter Henry was number two in tight end because not to bury Keenan Allen, because his was nearly a 28% target share, ranked like top 15. Mike Williams, 31%, was top 8 week one. Just 1 week, but you love to see that narrow target tree. Wasn't going to bury, give you a hard time for liking Allen. I'm just saying Mike Williams looks like a star to me, and I'd be the crazy guy saying, I know that sometimes the market is obviously, one would call it slower, other would say it's sane. I'm the crazy man who says right now Mike Williams over Keenan Allen. But all right, continue with where we were supposed to go on this outline before I veered us off path.
No, I think the Chargers are such an interesting team, man. So I'm glad you brought that up because I thought the whole outfit was underrated. Like, there's one team I drafted just recently with a bunch of, you know, guys from like Roto World and JJ Zacharyson, a bunch of heavy hitters or whatever. I ended up taking Eckler, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams, and I kind of hate myself for it. But at the same time, like, I think all of those guys have a chance to be pretty good this year. So, anyways, yeah, it is what it is, man. We'll see about these Chargers. They've sort of given me a little bit of a headache and like a little bit of heartburn as I'm sitting here talking about them. Let's move on to something that's a little more positive. Sure. Gardner Minshew, 19 of 20 completion, like his completion percentage over expectation was number one in terms of the NFL's Next Gen Stats. He was awesome. I think he was really good. It's also worth noting that he was top five in fastest time to throw and bottom five in intended air yards on his pass attempt. I'm kind of starting to talk myself into the fact that Jay Gruden, Gardner Minshew are a perfect marriage. And, you know, we could talk about how the Jaguars are trying to lose or whatever. Gardner Minshew isn't trying to lose out there, man. Like, I'm suddenly starting to think that this passing game might either the Colts are way overrated as a team or the Gardner Minshew led Jaguars passing offense might just have some really good sneaky fantasy value throughout the year.
Gardner Minshew, setting records for that 95% completion percentage. I think 3 TDs, no interceptions, first player ever to that week one. Yep. You know, the advanced stats didn't love him overall last year, but he finished first in deep ball passing. He was just awesome on balls that went far down the field. Fantasy-wise, I bumped him way up toward the end. I started thinking about it. I'm like, he's just a cheaper Josh Allen, both inaccurate, both going to run. Maybe they're going to be playing from behind more. The Bills have a really good defense and fewer running back answers. Although James Robinson looks like, to me, a major upgrade over Fournette. I would absolutely be grabbing him because they're going to treat him like a feature back. I know Thompson will get some catches. And if Minshew has that offense, okay. I like him. So, yeah, with the rushing, I think he was second among all quarterbacks last year in scramble rate. Minshew, you don't love to see just 3 targets from Chark.
Yeah.
I ranked him aggressively too, but rarely will you see Minshew in this defense probably only throw the ball 20 times too. So yeah, you love to see it. I mean, 8.7 YPA even. Minshew was really good in real life and is going to help you in fantasy too.
I mentioned the stats earlier about getting the ball out of his hands quickly. Only two quarterbacks, Phillip Rivers and Dwayne Haskins, had a faster time to throw, and only one quarterback threw it shorter in terms of intended air yards on his pass attempts, and that was Jared Goff. So I love that fit with Jay Gruden. But the receiver core is really interesting, as you mentioned, because I think a lot of us, and myself included, thought DJ Chark would be like a target hog in this offense. But the way that passing game sort of flows, I really think Laviska Shenault is going to end up being one of the most underrated players in drafts this year, because that sort of approach to passing fits that player particularly perfect.
Shenault, more carries than Antonio Gibson in college. Fun fact, yeah. Jay Gruden might be one of those guys, way better coordinator than head coach. And he might be really helpful here. And I was flat out, I was thought it was more of a Chargers stink than a Phillip Rivers stink, and I was just wrong. And thankfully I didn't pick the Colts in Survivor, like a lot of people in my pool did. But he's just going to dump off to his running backs. So I hope you have Hines and Taylor is all I'm saying. That just looks bad. I don't know what to tell you. People that pick the Colts make super. I picked them to win the division, I would absolutely pick Tennessee if I had to do over there.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I think that we could look at a very different – like, I think if this team played that – if that matchup got played out, you know, 10 times on a neutral field, I think the Colts probably win more of those games. Like, the Jaguars had some good breaks. Their rookie, C.J. Henderson, the cornerback there, the Colts went after him, and he was awesome in coverage. Plenty of pass breakups, really made them pay for going after him there. So we'll see what happens. But, I think the Jaguars are an interesting – they're not going to be a good team, but I think this passing game might be a little interesting to watch. I wanted to thank again our sponsor for this episode, Planters. When you want to satisfy a salty craving, Planters has you covered. Their deluxe mixed nuts are roasted to perfection and seasoned with sea salt, giving you the crunchy texture and enhanced flavor that you crave. Stay satisfied with Planters deluxe mixed nuts. All right, let's move on to week one trends you kind of hate to see. I think when you look at the teams that were top five in early down success rate, a few that we mostly expect: Vikings, Patriots, Cowboys, Rams, and the Raiders. That one might be unexpected. But let's talk about the teams on the bottom five of this perspective. An early down success rate is just successful play rate on your first and second down plays. So really, when you're trying to get that offense moving, this metric correlates really well with winning over the long haul, by the way. Maybe not so much in week one, but this one I wanted to look at here. The Chargers, the Washington Football Team, Steelers and Giants were tied for 31st in this metric, which is like, I mean, if that was the one game watching it throughout the entire weekend where I was like, these two teams probably could have used a preseason. They looked like they needed a little bit of time to get rolling. But the worst team in this metric, the Philadelphia Eagles, what's your panic meter right now on the Eagles offense as a whole?
First of all, I want to give you a little victory lap on Cam. I mean, I was skeptical of him, and you said they were top five in England.
Yes,
success rate.
So yeah, let me take that lap.
He looked pretty good. No, I'm serious. You were in on Cam. He looked good. I mean, they did their whole offense design McDaniels. I was maybe just dead wrong on that, because it was obviously a nice matchup and whatnot. But man, if they just keyed to his skills, it could really work out in fantasy terms, especially. But it was just one game, a good matchup. We'll get to the bad teams. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Cam week one?
You love to see it, man. I also just love the fact that
the outfit walking in. I lost that. I was like, why am I fading this guy when his outfit walking in? I'd already lost before the kickoff even started. So yeah, yes. You do love to see it. So
yeah, man, I love the marriage between this team and this player too. Like, it seems like, you know, it's not that the Patriots like want to get rid of Tom Brady or want to kick dirt on Tom Brady or anything like that, but it's just the reality of, like, I think McDaniels and Belichick are juiced up to like create this new offense and start from scratch. And I think we're just going to, like, that was a great first test. I can't wait to see, like, when they start to sort of open up the passing game as well. Cause I thought Cam, like, more importantly than for fantasy, yeah, obviously it's great that like he had all those designed runs. They don't really have to worry about, you know, long term with Cam Newton, because he's more of a bridge from the Brady era to whatever comes next. For fantasy, the rushing's great, but I thought even more important, like, his arm looked good. I thought he didn't look like he didn't look like, you know, MVP Cam Newton, but he at least looked like early 2018 Cam Newton, which is exactly what you want to see. So I can't wait to see sort of as they open that offense up more. Maybe I think I am dead set in my opinion that if Cam continues to play well, they are going to trade for a big name wide receiver. I know it always hasn't worked out for the Patriots with trading for wide receivers. Sure as hell hasn't worked out for when they've drafted wide receivers, but I think they're going to look at themselves like, hey, if we're, 4-2, Cam's playing well, we look like we could win the division or compete with the Bills, whatever. Let's make a big swing for a wide receiver and get N'Keal Harry and some of these goofballs off the field.
Right before we started recording this, Allen Robinson, your guy, scrapped all his Bears stuff from his social media. Yeah, he might have been spotted at Logan Airport even. But anyway, so, all right, let me circle back to your Eagles question. Apologies for taking us off there again. The Eagles were up 17-0 in this game.
Looking like it was going to be a blowout.
Truly 27 unanswered points later. I would go nuts when the announcer says it's unanswered in the middle of a game. I'm like, wow, you know the game is, they're not going to answer that. Interesting. So this is not that surprising to me. Philadelphia entered with a ton of offensive line injuries, just decimated, not just saying that, like two or three down. And Washington made the biggest upgrades among their defensive line. It wasn't Niners-esque, but it was right one step below that, the upgrades they made. So this doesn't shock me at all. I mean, DeSean Jackson's snaps were even limited. Boy, I thought he was going to have a better game. And Rager was coming off the injury. And one hot take, if it is one, I will tell you right now that I wrote in my weekly wrap, I would rather Dallas Goedert than Zach Ertz moving forward, just given their career trajectory, the second half last year and Ertz's injury proneness. I don't even think that's especially crazy. I think the odds are Goedert is the better PPR fantasy player moving forward than Ertz.
Well, I think the big thing, too, is that like neither of these guys is going to get taken off the field. Like this looked exactly like the Eagles offense to end last year, which if you're an Eagles fan, if you want them to win the NFC East, that's not what you want to see. We knew that they needed to move away from that offense, but you got Carson Wentz under 7.0 yards per attempt. You've got pretty much Greg Ward, Zach Ertz, and Dallas Goedert leading the way in the target tree. Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert are good players, but you wanted to get those vertical guys more involved. But Carson Wentz, number one, was under pressure a lot. 8 sacks. He completed 0 passes when he was under pressure, too, by the way. And he just needs to learn, like, when to get rid of the ball, man. Watching that game over again, like, just wasn't feeling things very well. And you brought up the 49ers comparison. Like, I don't think it's crazy to think that Washington, as a team that is absolutely loaded on with first-round picks on their defensive line, you know, we're talking about the two guys from Alabama. We're talking about Ryan Kerrigan. We're talking about plenty of good players. And then Chase Young, a potential transformative talent, gets dropped into the mix. It's not that dissimilar to Joey Bosa. I mean, to Nick Bosa getting dropped into the 49ers mix last year. Like, everybody suddenly has, you know, their assignments kind of taken down a notch, right? Like, now everybody's thinking about how do we stop Bosa. Then guys like Armstead can start to break out. Buckner can have a great season. Maybe that's not so dissimilar to in Washington. Holy crap, we got Chase Young now. We got to deal with this guy. Then Daron Payne, Allen, all of these guys can start to have big seasons as well. Even Montez Sweat, the guy they drafted last year, another first-round pick that they have on that defensive line there.
No, I absolutely think they were underrated entering the year and going to be not a cake matchup. And then Philadelphia's also dealing with the running back situation. Man, it's so frustrating. Yeah. Fantasy managers have spent, on Miles Sanders. Hopefully it's a quick return. And then Boston Scott, it always works that way. You think you get the free square in DFS, and of course he leaves injured too. So it's just that's just the way it goes, kids. And Peyton Barber, the most Peyton Barber line ever. 17 carries, 29 yards, 2 touchdowns. Is this hilarious there? But it's a Philadelphia, if they do want to make a deep playoff run, they're going to have to fix the protection. It's not just Washington's improved defensive line. There's definitely some issues with Philly as well.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of like hashtag both things can be true there. Yep. All right, let's talk about the Browns. Ugh. I mean, here let's start out number one by saying, if you didn't expect the Browns to just get taken to the woodshed by the Ravens in week one, I think you were kind of doing it wrong. Like, everything set up for the Ravens to just cream this team, their division rival that they know really well. the Ravens have an awesome defense that they made even better up front, even if they let go of Earl Thomas in the offseason. Lamar is just on a different level as a passer. I mentioned that Gardner Minshew was number one in completion percentage over expectations. Number two was Lamar Jackson. I think he's just like, he looks like a guy that's taken the next step, you know, and that's scary for everybody. Hollywood Brown's out there running deep routes. Everything is firing off for the Ravens. Conversely, the Browns are putting in a new system. They're trying to gel in a way that, you know, they're just not a quality a team like the Ravens. But at the same time, this stat from Rich Rebar at Lord Reeves on Twitter really did kind of throw me for a loop, because he said just 40% of Odell Beckham's targets from Baker Mayfield were deemed catchable in week one. He dropped one of them. So that's not what you want to see. But that ranks 57th out of 60 players with 5+ targets per Pro Football Focus. Last year, he ranked 76 out of 86 wide receivers. So are we just never like, are we not going to get that? Because at the same time, I didn't expect Beckham to produce in week one, right? But I would have liked to see Mayfield at least not look like totally the worst quarterback in the league.
I'm with you. I use Baltimore and Survivor. This was the team I was the most confident about this week. And man, thinking long term, it's like, is Baltimore going to regress a little bit with that gimmicky rushing attack? Oh, or Lamar Jackson might be even better, and you might get 2.0 version with all these attacks downfield being opened up. That's going to be, wow. I mean, should we just already have KC play Baltimore right now? and then on the flip side, I mean, yes, Beckham was a guy I did fade this year. It just looks so much like it's just one game in a tough matchup. You said 10 targets you'd like to see. It just looks so much like the last year's version with Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield. Right. You see the mechanics. Right. The concern last year was in the clean pocket. His numbers were so bad. So you wanted to wave it off and say coaching, and he's young enough. Players improve and his situation looks so good around him. But man, the mechanics and just, I don't know. Yeah, I'm very concerned. 4.8 YPA, no matter who your opponent is, with those weapons. Yeah, I think it's absolutely concern if you're a Beckham guy or Mayfield long-term outlook, for sure.
That's the problem, is that it looked exactly the same as last year. You know, like all of the problems that were present for Beckham and Mayfield were exactly the same. You know, Beckham made one drop. Like I said, that was an issue last year. But the connection between these two guys is just not there. That's problematic. Like I said, things could totally turn around. I'm going to see who they play. Who do they play in week two? They play the Bengals on Thursday night, right? Like, so they could totally turn it around against the Bengals, look like a much better team. And I do think they just sort of ran into a buzzsaw and got taken to the woodshed, like I mentioned, by the Baltimore Ravens, who might be, you know, one of the best two or three teams in the league. But it's just crazy that Baker Mayfield looks so different from the guy that came in and set the rookie passing record.
I know.
With like passing touchdown records with guys like Rashard Higgins and Brashad frickin' Perryman. He gets Odell Beckham, and these two just for over a year long period now can't figure it out.
I had Mayfield ranked aggressively high last year, like third or something. I was all in. I thought he was the next superstar for sure. Like, I just could not have been more wrong, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. And then we have to bring up the Nick Chubb situation, because he's going to be okay. Consider my level of concern much higher. If he's going to come off the field that often when they're trailing, I mean, forget the target 6-1 Kareem Hunt, but even more carries. He lost a fumble, and Nick Chubb is a real good real life player, and he's going to cash in those goal line scores, and he's going to be okay, especially with running back situation so scary right now throughout fantasy football. But yeah, it's an issue. It's a problem. And in PPR leagues, I don't know. I mean, is Kareem Hunt the more valuable property? I mean, it's possible.
It is possible. I mean, their snaps were exactly the same. 33 for both of these guys. Kareem Hunt lined up as a receiver on just 11% of his snaps after being at 31% in 2019. So I don't really know how these two guys can coexist together and not be sort of neck and neck in terms of fantasy production. If the Browns are going to be this great offense, yeah, Nick Chubb can punch in, you know, 12 touchdowns or something like that. But I don't know about that after week one. I kind of want to check in on you with this situation, because I know you were out on Tom Brady after a pretty poor finish to his New England career. Goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and not really a fun debut, but our producer noted that despite all that, He did have PFF's sixth best passing grade of the week, which I thought, I don't know that I thought he had the sixth best passing performance of the week, but where was week one just sort of like exactly what you expected from Tom Brady, or where are you at with that?
Yeah, you'd think a pick six would knock you lower on that. What, he's only the third player since, who was it, Schaub and Blaine Gabbert to have three straight games with a pick six now. I thought he was actually okay. He threw the ball downfield. He got a couple long pass interference penalties that would have really contributed to his fantasy box score for you that was right there. And then the narrative, the media kind of gave him a hard time. I was a little bit more, I thought it was a little bit more negative on him. But so I think he looked okay to me. I really don't have a strong opinion either way. Frankly, he looked fine. I mean, he looked okay, and things could have gone either way. But I'm not really here to say that, yeah, no, he looked done. I mean, he looked okay. Did you have any strong opinions?
No, I mean, it was expected. You know, this is a team that still needs time to gel. And Brady looked, I mean, Brady was apparently pretty pissed about the whole thing, you know, so I think it's going to be fine. He just needs some time. If you're a Gronk backer, though, that's the one I'd be worried about. OJ Howard had two red
zone. Oh, yes.
OJ Howard, two red zone targets, Gronk zero. Gronk was, you know, straight up behind him in the target share, too. So I'd be worried if I had Gronk more than if I'm thinking about this.
I said that on a prediction, Howard over Gronk, and I had a couple of my buddies who drafted him and gave him a hard time, but I was only half joking. Now I'm dead serious. I'm not kidding. I think OJ Howard, the light bulb's gone on. He will be the more fantasy valuable tight end than Gronk. You know, Gronk's awesome and he's a good blocker and stuff, but I mean, come on, that guy was on fantasy, I mean, reality shows 6 months ago. He wants to be out here getting hurt in his body. I mean, seriously, I think OJ Howard is.
Here's what I really wanted to finish with on Brady before I talk about it. What I wanted to finish on with Brady was this Bucks attack might not be ready for prime time yet, but they get the Carolina Panthers defense in week two. So they're gonna probably look a lot better in week two, because that Panthers defense got shelled in week one. And that brings us to our next segment, which is Who Got Shelled, presented by our friends at Planters. Every Wednesday, Dalton and I are going to look back at a defense or defensive player who got absolutely shelled last week. Then we'll dive into the data and point out the defensive matchups that you might want to take advantage of this Sunday. So, who got shelled last week? Well, sorry, Dalton, but it was your San Francisco 49ers who, whoever they decided was going to cover DeAndre Hopkins, it did not work out. When lining up against Emmanuel Mosley, 22 routes, 11 targets, 10 catches, 96 yards. That didn't work out. Really, the entire defensive approach, it did not go so well. Anyone who was fading DeAndre Hopkins because he had a new quarterback, you know, a new system, not such a great week one result.
Set career highs in catches with his first game, Arizona. You know who else got shelled was that Minnesota young secondary by Davante Adams. Me and you had him number one on our fantasy wide receivers entering the year. What a game by Davante Adams. 17 targets, two touchdowns. Even with Marquez Valdez-Scantling emerging, Adams, 17 targets, just absolutely shelling that Minnesota secondary.
You love to see it, man. You love to see top-level elite wide receivers doing their thing. All right, so who do you expect to get shelled this week?
Who do I expect? This week it's the Atlanta secondary is going to be overwhelmed. Give me Amari Cooper, man. Yeah. He has these big home road splits. He goes back home. Dallas's passing attack is going to get back on track. That game is the highest total this week. Blake Jarwin is out. So give me Amari Cooper and company at home against the Falcons, who are going to be overwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that Dallas offensive line. Finally, after, you know, almost a decade-long domination or half a decade-long domination, starting to show some cracks because of injuries and all that sort of stuff. But I'm not worried about it here in week two against an Atlanta Falcons defense that hasn't rushed the passer since Barack Obama was the president. Anyways, I expect to get shelled, and we just talked about the Packers taking it to the Vikings. I think they're going to take it to another division rival. Lions pass defense, yikes. Number one, you give up that performance to Mitchell Trubisky. I know that he was pretty bad in the first three quarters of the game, but nevertheless, you let all that up. They can't really rush the passer. Rodgers, I think the Rodgers that we saw in week one was not a mirage. I know that he has been on the decline and, you know, whatever, but I don't think he's lost anything physically. I think he's just developed into some bad habits over the years. But now, look, I know this is narrative and I'm sorry, but it is what it is. I think he's like ready to go out there and prove his organization wrong, prove the doubters wrong. He was awesome in week one. That was like a vintage Rodgers performance. He got the ball out quick. That's going to be even worse against the Lions defense that's banged up in the secondary. And like I said, can't put any pressure on the passer. I expect...
Dude.
Where do you have Rodgers ranked?
Rodgers got... Aaron Rodgers got like 6.4 YPA on the road last year. I put him as my sit in my column. You know, I didn't think he was a top 12 fantasy start this week. They decided to blast that out on the fantasy app saying Dalton Del Don says to sit Aaron Rodgers. I listed 65 people in my column, but that's the notification that went out. Sit Aaron Rodgers in. I hope you're sitting down, Matt. A couple people let me know that I was wrong behind the scenes. So, yes, I'm with you there, and the Lions are going to get shelled. I mean, I didn't expect Jeff Okuda, their number three pick, to immediately be inactive as well. So I'm with you here. Aaron Rodgers looks like a man on a mission to prove fools like me wrong, and he's probably going to do another shelling this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you might have gotten shelled by your own company there, Dalton, but that's got to happen sometimes to get those clicks, man. I got Rodgers ranked 7 this week, and I might push him up even higher. We will see what happens. But that was who got shelled. I hope we don't get shelled by making those picks like Dalton did last week with that Rodgers push notification. And once again, we want to give a shout out to Planters for that segment. Stay satisfied with Planters. Well, Dalton, we ran through a ton of players, a ton of stuff. What else you got coming up this week?
The aforementioned sit start column. I promise I get a couple of them right. But yeah, look for that.
After that rousing Friday endorsement and, you've given yourself, make sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can tell you to sit guys who go off like Aaron Rodgers. Exactly. Yeah, no, man, he proved me wrong. But again, yeah, no, that's it. I'm on a podcast with Pianowski tomorrow talking some week 2 NFL picks, too.
Perfect. Make sure you check that out. And while you're eagerly anticipating that particular podcast with Scott and Dalton, check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor. And of course, the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat Forty from SI. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Matt Harmon _BYB. That's at Dalton Del Don. One more thanks to Planters. And tomorrow, Dalton, have a great show with Scott as you preview the betting lines. We're out of here.